This is Dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
This is another edition of Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel. And sitting here acting like a fool for KLRB, this is Phil Kogan.
Who's the fool?
I don't know. Sometimes I have so much thrown at me in 1 hour that I'm not too sure whether one mind can stand it all. Last week we were talking about Wallace.
Yeah, we'll and, do some more Wallace.
And a lot of things have come out in the news, and much has come out about mysterious people associated with Arthur Bremer, the accused man who is accused of shooting Governor Wallace, and he has apparently been following political candidates and political office holders around the country and around Canada and all over the place. There's so much to talk about. Why don't we get right into that?
I guess.
Do you want to tell what Dialogue Conspiracy is about and how long it's been about that? And
well, let's get off the usual format of what Dialogue Conspiracy or Assassination is about, and talk about a program that was on KGO this Friday morning. Jim Dunbar had Larry Abrams, who wrote a book with Gary Allen called None Dare Call It Conspiracy. And we've been on the
yeah,
air.
I've seen that.
Yeah, have you seen
In fact,
it?
I was mailed a copy of that by the local
John Birch Society.
Birch Society.
Yeah, that's right. This book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, is very close to my opinion of how the government was overthrown. And I watched the program today because somebody called up and thought Somebody thought that Dunbar was being antagonistic to Abrams in his questioning and putting down where is the conspiracy. And Abrams said, let me tell you that this is the first radio show in the United States that I've been invited on at all. You know, that they've sold between 2 and 3 million copies of this book or passed them out across the country, the Birch Society has. And that the show, the Dunbar show, he was given about a half hour Friday morning, which was the first chance to talk. Use the word conspiracy. We've used the word assassination for 1 year for the reason that I feel that in order for the conspiracy to be successful, the conspiracy that they talk about in the book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, had to have assassinations and murders. The power that they're talking about required a lot of dead bodies that were in the way of the conspiracy. And he didn't go into those bodies, but he mentioned on the program men that were part of the conspiracy like David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, and people in the news media like Paley from Columbia Broadcasting and Sarnoff and Salzberger from the New York Times, Mr. Heisel from Time Life, Richard Nixon, the ATT, and the bankers. And they asked him, Dunbar said, what is the danger to us if this conspiracy exists? This particular book centers on the Council of Foreign Relations, as you know, Phil.
None Dare Call It Conspiracy.
And it emphasizes the fact of John J. McCloy's connections to the World Bank and Alan Dulles and the law firms that represented Adolf Hitler and the ammunition industries in Europe and the United States. And Dunbar said to Abram, what is the danger to us of this conspiracy if it exists? And he said, the Americans keep going to the polls and want to make changes, and there's been no changes in 30 years. Now, the opinion of the John Birch Society, or this particular, the authors on this book, is much closer to what I've been saying and what I've said all along in terms of the conspiracy in the United States. It's interesting which side is coming out and using the word conspiracy now in a book, pushing a book and getting on the news media, because for example, local Democrats in this town have nothing to do with me. People like Peter Bisag or all the Democratic Party in this city have nothing to do with me in this local community when I talk about political assassinations or conspiracy. But the American Independent Party is much closer to my way of thinking in recognizing how the power shaped up in the last 30 years and the book that they put together exactly right. So all I have to do with them in some way is link the actual guns and bullets to their theory, because my overall theory is exactly the same as theirs. And if I get in touch with these people and with that book, maybe there's a chance to really blow this thing open in 1972. They're pushing the word conspiracy a lot.
There was something which I know you're going to refer to, because I know you've caught it, but I was surprised to see one of our presidential candidates, a woman, a black woman by the name of Shirley Chisholm, I was very surprised to see her comment on assassinations and the research surrounding the assassinations, and yet she did, and the story was reported nationwide that Shirley Chisholm has some doubts about what has been said about the assassination so far.
That's right. She was on television in Los Angeles when she spoke in Long Beach, and I got a call from somebody right away who saw the show and told me about it. And then there were news broadcasts in Carmel on another station. I don't know if it came over your wire service or not.
We had it here.
But here she was saying, we'll open up the National Archives and we'll talk about who killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Now, Shirley says that both the parties are so much alike and don't represent truth. So here is a woman running for president, which is the first time. It is a black person, which is another first. And it is the first candidate for president in the United States to mention the assassinations as being a factor. A political campaign, eventually it will become the most important issue in the United States. That's what I said, you know, back in June when we started here, that this is the one single main factor in the United States that links together all the things. If you worry about Ann Chipker or the bombings in Vietnam or the weapons or the surveillance of the data banks or the new Supreme Court decision on minority people can sit, they don't have to have an opinion, they can only observe. That was written up by Mr. White, Supreme Court Stewart, this week. All the repressions that are coming down, eventually when you put it all together, you're going to date it to November 22nd, 1963, where the power structure lost its control temporarily with John Kennedy, and gained it back when they killed him. They lost it for 1,000 days when Richard Nixon lost the election in 1960 as a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. And then they retrenched and manipulated a couple of deaths and were back swinging the controls. They had the control with Lyndon Johnson, and it was continuous.
Was Shirley Chisholm's statements a surprise to you?
Well, I was so excited because I had sent her about a week before, Shirley Chisholm and Bell Abzug and a man by the name of Ryan, and Dulles had come out for impeaching Richard Nixon due to the mining of the harbor. And I sent letters to them and said, the mining is just a tip of the iceberg. You know, it's nothing, you know. It's the tit on the body. It's nothing. It's not the problem. The problem is how these people got into office, and they have to be impeached. And that same week, I sent out 119 letters regarding Hugo Pinnell and bringing in the chain of conspiracy from Washington down to our local community. I sent a letter to 119 members of Congress.
You got a response on that, too, from somebody called...
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon.
And the Justice Department. We'll go into that letter if we have time. So the first candidate who was running for office to mention opening up the National Archives did it this week. And that brings conspiracy out on even a program as small as KGO, because that will make ripples. We have Shirley Chisholm coming out. And then there was another news broadcast, which was on Thursday night, Mort Saul was on television. It was late at night, and he was on a national program, and he was talking about a subject which had a news blackout, Jim Garrison. People keep saying, what's happening to Jim Garrison? What happened to the case down there? And Garrison was arrested. So the LA Times had what is a 2-inch article, not very big, but I have a copy of it here. And the New Orleans State's item had an article, and this is what it said. It said that Pershing Gervais, who was a federal informer, said he delivered payoffs to Jim Garrison about illegal gambling case because he was forced to trap Garrison by harassment of the Justice Department. The Justice Department made Gervais hand money that was marked to Garrison to trap him, and he's in Canada now. Pershing Gervais is going to become another one of what I call my heroes, you know, in my newsletter, and we'll go into that some more later. In the ilk of, say, Marchetti of the CIA or Louis Tackwood of the LA Police Department, Frank Martinez of the LA Police Department, Larry Shears, Ellsberg, people are surfacing and telling the truth. And now Gervais is saying that he was offered a job at General Motors in Canada by protection by the Justice Department of the United States to frame Garrison. The Justice Department is supposed to investigate crimes, not frame people. So the conspiracies roll along. Now, I was writing yesterday, I was doing some writing, and I was looking into my files because I wanted a reference to the plan to kill Nixon, which came out in the news several years ago. It was a Yemenite family, and in 1968, a man was approached to come in on a deal to kill Richard Nixon, which would take place a few years later.
You have an article in your hand, several articles.
Yeah, I brought those.
Those are from, what, it looks like, the New York Times.
One New York Times, and one's from the San Francisco Chronicle. And a man who used to be an informer in California when he worked as a fruit picker. He was a paid informer on narcotics peddlers and prostitutes. He was asked by a gentleman in New York City to participate in a plan to kill Richard Nixon. And they said that they, if he joined the plot, there'd be a lot of money. They were already sending $2,000 a month overseas to be stacked in a bank. This was in 1968, and the assassination wasn't going to take place till much later. But I came across something which was really interesting in the article on the plot to kill Nixon. They were supposed to wait till America had its most violence-ridden year. Then the Americans would be told that Richard Nixon's opponent was slain in the same circumstances, and then they would kill Nixon. Now, isn't that the script we see with Wallace that we talked about last week, that the killing of Wallace is to set the stage for Richard Nixon? Now, and I didn't even remember that in my filing cabinets back from 68, I just keep a file on evidence of various plots to kill Richard Nixon, that this particular man said that the plot, part of the plot was that Nixon would be killed following the slaying of one of his opponents. So that was in 1968, and I pulled that out.
Do you think that that plan still exists somewhere?
Well, you know what happened? This is very interesting. The New York Times, and again, the Council of Foreign Relations, this book, None Dare Call a Conspiracy, refers to members of the New York Times, James Reston, Walter Lippmann, certain writers are in on these conspiracies and keep the truth from being told. What happened was the man and his two sons that were supposed to be on the plot to kill Richard Nixon were arrested, and then the New York Times carried full stories discrediting the informer. And they said the informer just had a bad temper, or the informer was kicked out of the apartment of the man who he was telling about, or that he drank whiskey, and that these men are Muslims and don't drink whiskey. Therefore, the informer is wrong, and the arrested were acquitted. And that was the end of the plot. See, and New York Times...
So you think they were acquitted by the newspaper?
Well, the court. They went to court.
But by the information which the New York Times revealed.
See, what they didn't go into the fact, the man who informed and squealed about the plan to kill Richard Nixon, who wanted to save Richard Nixon's life, was connected with intelligence agencies overseas. He was an intelligent agent. He worked with the spy systems. They didn't say whether it worked with the Friends of the Middle East or the CIA. He worked with our Narcotics Bureau in California. And he was a reputable intelligence agent. And when these men came to him and wanted to include him in the plot, he informed the federal government, and his reward was that he was put down as crazy. And the men, they had M-16 rifles in their room, and they had carbines, and they had all kinds of weapons. And these men said, well, you know, we're going back to Palestine soon, and you need these weapons there. There's not enough of them for us there. So they justified the ownership of all the weapons, and all they were arrested for was keeping knives with switchblades, which was illegal in New York. But they broke the credibility of the informer, and said that he just simply didn't like the hospitality and used to drink. And the informant was broken down, and the guilty were acquitted. And that was the end of the plot. They never went into the money that was salted away in the old country or did any investigation on that at all. But the part of the plot was to kill Nixon's opponent and then follow it with Nixon. Now, that in Dalek conspiracy and with assassination, I talk about the Lewis Tackwood plans of the Los Angeles Police Department to kill Richard Nixon. And the way the media covers it is this. Friday's paper has an article about Bremer being up in Canada and being stalking Richard Nixon and staying with close range of Richard Nixon before he shot at Wallace. And the San Jose Mercury has an article disproving any political motivation in the attempt to shoot Wallace, because if he wanted Humphrey and he wanted Nixon and he wanted Wallace, then all he wanted was attention. See, the Friday version of the San Jose Mercury says, being as he wanted Nixon and Humphrey and Wallace, it seems that all he wanted was public attention.
Who's making that statement?
The New York Times Service is, again, discrediting the fact there could be a conspiracy of in the fact that Mr. Bremer is a few feet from Richard Nixon in Canada. They discredit the fact that somebody may want him to shoot at Nixon later, or the fact that if he shoots Wallace, he's gaining Nixon's votes, you know, so that he's still in power with the Southern strategy. Maybe this is a little convoluted in terms of political gains or loses, but they're breaking down the credibility of your Bremer being part of a conspiracy. Like the same New York Times News Service said that Bremer was at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, and we'll go into that, where he spent the night. He was there April 7th and 8th, and he spent the night there, and Humphrey was supposed to be in that hotel on the 9th for a two-day stay. Well, he left there. He was there 2 days. He left there the day that Humphrey was supposed to arrive. Now, the fact that he checked in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, which is the most expensive, most famous hotel in the United States, one of the most famous in the world, the fact that this man stayed there April 7th and 8th, doesn't cause the New York Times to wonder, who did he see at the Waldorf Hotel? You see, Spiro Agnew has an apartment on the 7th floor there, and so do a lot of other people. And if you want Agnew to be president, how do you know, how can they say that he stayed there because Humphrey was coming? If they wanted to have a meeting with him, just in case somebody saw him walk into the Waldorf, they could time it at the time that Humphrey had reservations, just to say he was after Humphrey. It hides what Bremer was really doing at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. And these are the things that people have to ask themselves. The very fact that he had the money or stayed there, if he stayed there, the loner, checked in one of the most expensive hotels in the United States, checks in a room, sits alone, and leaves the day before Humphrey gets there. That's really stalking Humphrey. But the way the news takes it, they twist it all around that, oh, therefore he's after Humphrey.
And it's not necessarily, one does not necessarily follow the other. How did the government or whoever found out that Bremer had been tailing other candidates? It came through, I see a couple of photographs attached to this. I've seen other photographs. It was through examination of crowd photographs.
This is the way I point to a federal conspiracy of a high order in our Justice Department, just like the people that framed Garrison. When Bremer was arrested, there were various things in his rooms and his coat pockets and things, and among them was a stub or gasoline ticket of having been in Canada. Now, the very first day, within 24 hours of searching, they could have said he was in Canada. And somebody has pursued, and the Secret Service has blown up pictures of the crowd that was taken while Nixon was in Ottawa, Canada, and have a picture of Bremer just a few feet away from him. But I think that the minute the assassination attempt took place at Wallace, the Canadian borders and the Mexican borders could be checked to see if Bremer crossed. You use your name. You know, he's checked in and used his name around. So far, there's no alias. So if they want, see, the investigation is forced upon them, and then they cover it up. They don't want the investigation. When I say they, I use an example of a perfect example that was in the news was that we talked about last week. There was a getaway car, and a suspect was caught after Wallace was shot in Maryland on the highway, a powder blue car. And the excuse for having that suspect, remember, Phil, was that he was changing license plates and that he wasn't involved in the crime.
Right.
And I talked about that last week on the meaning of why did you stop a man who's changing license plates at a time like this. And he was described very carefully as being 6 feet, 2 inches tall, weighing about 220 pounds. Well, this week we have Mr. Bremer going across Michigan from Kalamazoo over to Milwaukee, and he's on a ferry boat. And the man who sells the tickets remembers Bremer very well, describes him, and tells about the people that he was with, because there was a man in the back of his car, and then he was with another man. And the man at the ferry crossing says that he took note of Bremer because of the political talk, and that he was with a man who was 6'2" and weighed 220 pounds. Now, up in Michigan, at the ferry crossing, he's with a swarthy man with dark hair who seems to be Greek with a New York accent, who is 6'2", weighs 220 pounds. The police in Maryland, unbeknownst, to the Michigan man talking, but this is the police job. See, this isn't Mae Brussels' job. This is up to the FBI to take the man to Maryland, because if they had him as a suspect and let him go, they have a police log with his name, description, and weight, and what he was doing, right? His driver's license. All they have to do is find that man between now and next week, take him up to Michigan, and ask the man at the ferry crossing, was this the man that was with Bremer? And that's a conspiracy, because there's two people. The police had a suspect and let him go. And far away in another state, a man is giving the physical description that's identical to the police suspect. And he not only is giving the description, but he's giving a New York accent or a geographical location that he seems to come from. And you have Bremer checked in New York at the hotel that Spiro Agnew lives in. So you have a whole net there that isn't followed through yet. And then you had another interesting thing. The alleged assassin has a brother. And that came out in the news this week. James Earl Ray had a brother, and when they arrested Ray, oh, there were all kinds of concealment about his sister and his family and misinformation. And it turned out much later, a year or two later, that James Ray's brother works for Stoner of the States Rights Party, a very right-wing organization, a kind that wouldn't mind helping see Martin Luther King killed with the help of a few federal authorities. He works with Stoner. Ray's brother. Well, in this case, it turns out that, and Ray's brother had visited him the day before he left the Missouri penitentiary, and the next day, James Ray got out of the penitentiary. He had a Social Security card out into the name of Raines, and he was able to get employment right away in Illinois because he had ID on him, which you can't get while you're sitting in a penitentiary. You can't duplicate Social Security cards with alleged names or aliases. So he was out and on his way. Well, in this case, we have a brother now. Mr. Bremer has a brother. And the brother is under federal investigation. He's with federal authorities in Florida and in Texas. He's been under federal investigation. Now, the excuse of apprehending his brother, Roger, was that he had some reducing salons that he advertised that didn't, in fact, exist. But the key states in every conspiracy, if you get, or that coroner in L.A., that Canada is involved, Florida is involved, Texas is involved. They're running out of scripts. The banks and the Bahamas and Jamaica, everything is left. Only thing left is a ticket to the Bahamas for this particular guy. But the key city, some way or other, always fit in. So I don't have much about Brother Roger yet, but he is in touch with federal authorities. Because they say it's an indictment, but it's interesting. It's on the reducing thing, but he travels between Florida and Texas, Brother Roger. And it's getting
Has
he
been to Mexico recently?
No, he hasn't been to Mexico yet, but that he's in Canada. So next week, maybe he'll be in Mexico. Since we met last week, and we did, a lot of people who heard this show maybe didn't hear the one, and it's a shame. It should be a continuous series of the path of the alleged assassins that are not lone assassins or loners in any sense of the word. Just to give a brief resume of last week's show, the cover story about Bremer was that he was a loner and a misfit. I was out at Pacific Grove High this week talking to a large group of kids, and only one out of maybe a couple of hundred knew the term cover story. And the complaint has been many times that I move along on these shows and use references to things that people assume, I assume they know, and I take it for granted they know. I did this last week. I referred to Bullet 399. If Wallace went to the Army hospital, they duplicate the Bullet 399, and I got a call right away at home, you know, like, what does that mean? It's a whole vernacular of its own because there's a whole right. book on that subject. So the cover story, for those of you who didn't hear the show last week, is that Mr. Bremer is a loner, a misfit. He wants to be famous. He wants a place in history. He doesn't talk to his ma. He doesn't talk to his pa. He doesn't have meaningful relationships. He has no girlfriends. The cover story is the story the news media puts out that has no basis in fact for the evidence of where he worked, how he earned his money, who he saw, his mobility.
Sometimes unwittingly, though. Sometimes because the news media puts that cover story out because that's what they're given to believe as
no, I don't
to be
believe,
the facts.
I don't believe that, Phil. The cover story comes out very swiftly for some particular purpose. Now, a magazine like Life magazine and Life and Time are part of the conspiracies, and to keep the people under control by putting out misinformation, they, you see, when valuable information comes out and details of Lee Harvey Oswald, in the Soviet Union and his security clearances and his connections to Navy intelligence. Life doesn't do a story on that, and researchers have the name of the chain of command of people who stop it. Life has a purpose, and they tell you, Lifetime, New York Times, just tells you so much. You get a few honest reporters who come up once in a while, and in trying to do a good job, they'll give you certain information. But the main editorial office gives you a real cover story. This week, Life has a picture, because we were told that Bremer's room was messy. So there's a picture of a man standing in a room with some garments of clothes on the floor. And have you ever seen this, Phil? It's a really funny issue. It is worth, people should really buy it. It's May 26, 1972. And the cover story is two big pages. The boy who shut everyone out. And his mother claims that he probably shot Wallace because he doesn't like the summertime. And if he's arrested or in jail, then the sun won't get on his skin because it's sensitive. And then she thinks it over, and she says, no, it has to be something he ate. It just had to be something he ate because maybe the sun isn't right for him. And then she has a real conclusion. No, it isn't what he ate, but maybe. She says, maybe. You know, it's one of those false cigarettes. She says, you know what I mean. She doesn't want to say the word. She says, I don't want to say the word. See, he couldn't stand regular cigarette. Maybe that made him mad. See, you know, cigarette smoke. But she thinks, you know, like maybe that false stuff, you know, like the grass. But she won't say it. See, because that's a no-no. Then they have a picture of Dad grinning and looking cross-eyed, you know, and they go into the fact that Dad has his little home, two-family home, where the paint is peeling off, but his son has moved into an expensive apartment for $138 a month. He's living well beyond the family's means now, and there's a picture of Dad. That's a cover story, because if I can do research, you know, in Carmel Valley without any investigative agencies and come out with a show or an explanation better than they've got, then you know they're just doing a cover story, because there's been a lot of facts and information.
Yeah, but you're lumping when you say that the news media is putting out these cover stories intentionally, you're lumping all the news media together. And, of course, there are newspapers and are radio stations, and I don't know of any TV stations yet, but there are various segments in the news media, small publications, computer and automation, that are really part of the news media, but maybe they're not the news establishment.
Oh, if I didn't think there was a chance to get across to all kinds of people in spite of the news control. You know, Dunbar asked Abraham about this news control. How does this affect
That's
you?
That's this morning on the show.
Friday morning. He asked him, how does the New York Times or Life or Time keep control so the truth of the conspiracy doesn't come out? He said, well, what they're doing with me is, for one thing, they've had a review of my book in the New York Times for a month, a copy of it, and it has already sold 2 million copies more than The Godfather. But they pretend it doesn't exist. No one in the major media talks about it. It's not on the bestseller list. It doesn't make the bestseller list. Then he said that there are two agencies in San Francisco that control all the paperback books, and they skim them, and they make the conditions. If you send them out, you know, you have to pay for the full thing in 90 days, and we'll sell back, you have to buy back everything we don't sell, and they make the conditions so hard. He was asked, how come the Birch Society is the only one that sells this book? And these stands control what gets to the book stands. There's a book that Avon Press is going to do on Lewis Tackwood, the Glass House Tapes, on the L.A. Police Department, and how they plan conspiracies, and how they, you know, the killing of Nixon, and framing people in San Quentin, and the death row that didn't commit the crimes, and they pay agents to commit violence. We'll see if that book is reviewed in the New York Times or Life or Time. See, these books sell, but they're not reviewed. Jim Garrison's book is into his second printing. It's in the paperback. It's selling by word of mouth, and we can talk on it.
Okay, this is Dialogue Conspiracy with research specialist Mae Brussel. We'll identify the station. This is KLRB, FM, Carmel. Stereo serving you 24 hours a day.